Good afternoon. This is Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Haiti Children provides care and education to abandoned, orphaned, and disabled children in Haiti. The organization operates a rehabilitation and therapy center, schools, and water projects, and works to employ Haitians at all its facilities. My guests today are Susie Krabacher, co-founder and CEO, and Robin Hamill, president. Let's talk about your organization on the ground and what it looks like.
Our primary location is in Arcahaye, which is about 40 miles northwest of Port-au-Prince. And that's the 20-acre campus that houses the children that live with us. And there are 131 kids that live with us, half of whom have some form of physical and or emotional disability. We have a school on campus where we educate 300 kids from the community that join our kids. We have a church and a community center there that we use to outreach into the community to talk about things like accountability and entrepreneurship and hygiene and birth control. So we really try to, you know, invite the community into our campus to share with them kind of best practices around, you know, those subjects and others. We also have the physical therapy center there that we treat our own kids. And we also invite children from the community in. And thankfully, we've successfully treated and released a number of kids. And, you know, that facility, the unexpected, incredible blessing of that facility was that because disability is such a taboo subject in Haiti, it's viewed as a curse, that many of these women lived in the shadows and they didn't come out until we invited them to our campus, to our therapy center. And these women have discovered that they're not alone. And so they've actually created their own kind of community group where they watch each other's kids while some go to the market to sell their produce. And so it's been an incredible thing that's happened there. In addition, we've got two schools in Port-au-Prince. And so in total, we educate about 1,200 kids every day. And through our water program and nutrition programs, we probably touch and serve about 5,200 people every single day in Haiti.
And can you talk about the need in Haiti for your organization? What are the gaps that you're filling?
Well, this is my opinion. I am really interested in the initiative of keeping children in the home rather than being institutionalized. I was in the foster care system in Alabama when I was little, and there's just no better situation than having a loving family, if that is possible. Now, when there's a situation of abuse, that's such an exception to that feeling. But these Haitians love their children, and Haitian mothers are just in the culture of family in Haiti is just it's just beautiful. So what we've been trying to do, rather than work in a situation where, you know, it is often corrupt. The social affairs department does not have the staff, does not have the funds to investigate if the children were really abandoned or were they taken. And we've found through our community services that a lot of women have come to us to ask for help because they were solicited by what we call a middleman of orphanages in the city, Port-au-Prince, to give up their children for $250. And the spiel is basically for $250, your child gets to go to a great school in Port-au-Prince. When it's ready to go to school, it's going to get the good milk, which means formula. We can take care of your child. $250, you can come back and forth on the tap-taps, which are the public transportation in Haiti. And it sounds, you know, like maybe my child would be better off if I let my child go and I can see my child. And then, you know, the spiel involves when they're 18, they'll be healthy, educated, and they'll come back and take care of you. So about a year ago, six women in particular came to our community services center and said, you know, we were told that we could see our children, and we let the children go with this gentleman, and we've been visiting them in Port-au-Prince for a year, and now they're gone, and we don't know where they are. So one woman said, my child is still there, but I want him back because I'm afraid the same thing will happen. We did go, and we got that child back, but rather than being, you know, a foreigner coming into an orphanage in Haiti that's owned by a Haitian, I sent the mother with our director of our facility. And they told the woman, you know, you have to give us $2,000 to get your child back because we've spent that money. And, of course, the woman makes a dollar a day, so she was not allowed to get her child back. We came on the scene and said, okay, we're going to pay you the $2,000 to get that child back. And when they saw that it was a foreigner and that we know the laws in Haiti, I've dealt with children's services and child protection for 25 years there, they gave the child back without a fee. But our purpose right now in Haiti is, yes, we do have children living with us, but we want children to stay with their families and give a roadmap of services that are available through a lot of times foreign partners like us. But there, Haiti is a growing government, a growing democracy, and there are some services available actually in Haiti. So with our partnership with 12 hospitals in Haiti, we can get the mother the help she needs for her sick child. You do not have to go and abandon your child because you think someone else can take care of it better than you. And we also try, when children are abandoned because the mother is worried that she is not going to be able to take care of that child as well as someone else, we go and try to reunite those families and say, we will be here as an institution who can give you some services like free education, admittance into our schools for free. We have clinics, we have mobile clinics. If your child is sick, just come here. We have full-time doctors 24/7. Yes, you can come and be part of this family, but you can also raise your own family better than anyone else could.
Yeah, I was just going to add that we had an agreement with the Social Affairs that regulates orphanages and orphans and the adoption of orphans. And in the preamble of that agreement, it actually says, we, the government of Haiti, do not have the resources or the funding available to provide the services that Haiti Children is able to provide. So when you talk about the gap, there's an enormous gap, particularly here, because Haiti is a very impoverished place. There's barely enough money to pay the teachers and the doctors and the nurses. And so the abandoned kids, and particularly those with disabilities, really get left behind. There are no government services tailored to them. And so that's an enormous gap that we fill.
Mm-hmm. It seems really important to your organization to pull in community members from Haiti, and that Haitians are involved in your organization. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what is their involvement and why is that important?
Employment is another facet of our organization. We really try to create jobs for Haitians. We don't have any foreign expats working in our facilities in Haiti. So I feel that what we're doing is a very good job in educating, training, especially people who live in rural areas who maybe didn't get to go to school, but they're great caregivers. We have 131 children living with us, as Robin said, and we employ in our schools, in our clinics, in our water and sanitation programs, 220 people. We're starting an initiative where we're growing. We have three huge greenhouses, probably a total of 8,000 square feet of greenhouses. Mm-hmm. So we're also selling at a wholesale price the things that we grow in the greenhouses, and our chickens and our eggs and our goats, so that the people can then take them and go sell them in Port-au-Prince for a higher price. So it's becoming a little bit of an industry in the area of RKA in Haiti. The other thing that we are doing for the community is teaching them how to grow trees. We just got 2,000 trees donated to us by an organization called Food for the Poor, and we planted half of them ourselves, and then we gave the other 1,000 to the community. And Haiti is 98% deforested. Mm-hmm. The coral reef is becoming, it's dying because the mudslides and especially during, you know, rainy season, you can fly over Haiti and see a ring of mud over the entire coast. So we're, in a very small way, in our little community, which is on the ocean, we're taking care of our place in Haiti. Mm-hmm.
But we also have a philosophical view that Haiti needs to be lifted up from within. It's not going to be saved by some people that live in Aspen, Colorado. We can provide the impetus and some education and some funding to get things going. But we talk about changing expectations. And if you're Haitian and you believe that you're going to be poor and impoverished and uneducated for the rest of your life, you will. And so we change that expectation that we provide excellent education, provide excellent values through our schools and through our community outreach to create the future leaders of Haiti. And so when we talk about, and our board talks about kind of the big picture, it's to create the future political, business, faith, philanthropic leaders of Haiti, and really to engage Haitian society, particularly the upper class, to really get more involved, and that they really should be providing many of the services that Susie and Joe and the organization have been providing over the last quarter of a century.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. Haiti Children provides care and education to abandoned, orphaned, and disabled children in Haiti. My guests today are Susie Krabacher, co-founder and CEO, and Robin Hamill, president. I'd love to hear stories about kids who you're like, yes, you are going to be a leader.
Oh,
in
I
the
have
future.
To tell. I have to tell you a story. So we have a lot of our children. Since I've been working there 25 years, you know, they're not going. We don't call them orphans because we're their family, and they're never going to be adopted. They're not going to be taken to another country. We are raising them as you would raise your own children. So they have, right now, you know, Christmas is a big deal. Everybody's making their little Christmas lists. But the kids start making an allowance when they turn 14 to help do chores on the property. You know, they may help with the wash. Some of them love to work in the kitchen. Some of them like to hang out with the staff and be secretaries. And so They make an allowance, but the deal was that they have to give 10% of their allowance to charity. So you've got orphans that are actually starting their own charity mm-hmm. in Haiti. And we gave them 6 months to decide what charity they wanted to start to help their own community. And they chose to help the widows in the community because, keep in mind, this is an area, there's no electricity, there's no running water, there's not a flushing toilet in, you know, within miles. So the widows, when they're elderly, have to hike down the mountain themselves, usually in bare feet, to get water, to haul water, to, you know, pick corn from the fields. So my children, I was so impressed with them that they noticed that this was a hardship. And they were drawn to these, I guess everybody dreams of a grandmother that you can love on and that's going to love mm-hmm. on you. So the children decided they were going to take care of the widows. So our teenagers have 34 widows that they provide water. They take a monthly basket of food, and a lot of them have, you know, medical needs, so they buy their medicine. Of course, we get all that at a huge discount. So it's become like a real family. Mm-hmm. These elderly women love to see these children hiking up that mountain to come and hug on them. And, you know, the kids like to read to them because some of them are blind or, you know, bedridden. So it's really, I'm very proud to say that my kids have that heart.
Yeah, and one of the other things that there are 10,000 registered charities in Haiti. Many of them sprang up after the earthquake in 2010. But one of the unintended consequences of so much foreign aid that poured in at the time is it built up what I would call an entitlement mentality and a lack of responsibility and accountability. And we push back on that every single day. And to say that, yes, we may be bringing aid from afar, but you need to be the ones to actually implement those programs. And again, as Susie said, we don't employ any non-Haitians. And so we provide employment and we provide expectations. And you asked about how the engagement with families is going. And there's really an oligarchy that exists in Haiti. There are about 9 or 10 families that really kind of control everything. And this one family, the Baker family, has taken us under their wing. And so we can say that we're starting to see progress. And that came out of Miriam Baker, who had a child that was born with a disability. And she did not accept that child when the child was born. She said, there must be some mistake. That can't be my kid. After 2 weeks, she finally recognized that that was her child. And her heart totally changed. And she loved on that child, little T-Sash. And regrettably, he died about a year ago. And that created the family. And this is an enormous family that has enormous kind of influence and volunteers, is that they had started this foundation. They said, we're going to support one charity every single month. They came to our campus. They spent a day. They had an Easter party for us on the first year that they did this. And they said, you know what? This is the place that we're going to focus our attention, our exclusive attention on. And so we are starting to make some inroads with changing things. And there's an emerging foster care system in Haiti that we're very supportive of and hopeful that that will take root in a very responsible and successful way.
It sounds that you are up against a lot in Haiti. Do you feel hopeful? Do you get overwhelmed?
We're on the way over here today. We were talking about how to control worry, how not to get stressed out. And I gave Robin a book written by Dale Carnegie about how to conquer worry. And the takeaway from the first 50 pages was this. For me, I am living the worst case scenario. Haiti is the worst case scenario in the world. However, it's also been an incredible, I now believe in miracles because I have seen them. I have had children who were, I was told by our Haitian medical staff that, you know, this child is a vegetable. This child doesn't know what you're saying. He never will walk. He'll never understand. He'll never talk. And one child in particular, not too long ago, came on his own 2 feet to greet me when I came, and he pointed to his head, and the only word that he said was the most profound word that he could ever say to change my mind. He pointed to his head and said, "Pa legume, it's I'm not a vegetable." And because he had been hearing all these years, and it was years that he'd been hearing everyone say, you know, he's a vegetable. He's not going to hear you. He's not going to hear you. And we've got probably 200 or 300 stories like that. Yes, we've lost many, 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 many children because a lot of them, when they come, are terminally ill. They did not die alone. They died you know, the children that we have learned, you know, cherish each other because you don't know if you'll be here tomorrow. And this is a family that's endured many, many, you know, we had the earthquake, we had hurricanes, and then after that, all that, cholera. 6 of my children got cholera and, you know, died within 8 hours. I got it. I went to bury them, and I got it, you know, burying them. And by the grace of God, somebody found me passed out in Miami. I had just flown back, didn't know I was carrying cholera. Had passed out outside my hotel trying to get a cab because I didn't feel well, and was in the hospital for 3 days without any ID, couldn't talk, you know, just it's been a real interesting journey. But I would never, ever say that it's hopeless. It is the worst case scenario. It is not hopeless. We're seeing people's lives changed every single day.
What has your toughest project or your toughest undertaking been?
I think it's the reestablishment of what we call the abandoned baby care unit at the General Hospital in Port-au-Prince. Susie started a facility there back in
95,
and it was to provide care for children that were abandoned. And this General Hospital is kind of where the lower class, I mean, most of Haiti abandons their kids. And so she was taking care of them for 14 years diligently. And then the earthquake happened. And during that process, Susie uncovered some corruption and was vocal about that corruption. And the government asked her to shut the facility down. And so she was essentially kicked out of the the general hospital. For me, the toughest thing is, as far as what we faced in the last few years, is we actually got an agreement to reopen after a couple years of negotiation. We actually got approval from the social affairs services that regulates orphanages and orphans, and we got an agreement in verbal agreement with the Ministry of Health, and we got funding. We have these amazing funding partners that said, yes, we absolutely want to see you open that facility again, because that would be the point of triage to try to keep families together. Rather than let the mom just drop the kid off at the steps of the hospital, invite her in, provide her with care, provide the child with care, and show her this, as Susie said, this roadmap of services to say you don't have to abandon your child. And in the unfortunate event that we couldn't, you know, persuade the mom to keep the child, that we would then provide services and then work with the government to place them in the most appropriate place. And so that didn't get done. And for me, that was a very, very frustrating thing, because here we are, you know, with all this expertise, all this medical care, all this incredible funding from generous people in the States, that was rejected. So for me, that was kind of one of the most, you know, kind of difficult things, because it was such a no-brainer to say, yeah, come on in. But again, what happens is it would have interfered with this
corrupt puppy mill
mentality that we've actually have evidence of hospital administrators, nurses, staff, doctors kind of cherry picking kids and calling up orphanages and saying, I've got a kid for you. And so we really believe that that's the reason this agreement didn't get executed was because it was a threat to a huge source of revenue. And remembering the government can't afford to pay many of its employees that work at the hospital. So you know, regrettably, we kind of understand it, and it's very heart-wrenching to understand it.
You're listening to Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. My guests today are Susie Krabacher and Robin Hamill from the nonprofit Haiti Children. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. One of the things that I saw on the website that I thought was kind of interesting was a mention that, like, no, you don't just, like, send people who want to volunteer to Haiti. And I think that's kind of interesting. I wonder what the pitfalls of kind of some well-intentioned people working around you are.
Yeah, so we have a pretty strong view on this. And because we're, you know, we're not a faith-based organization, but we're believers. And there are a lot of people that go to Haiti with huge hearts. And the unintended consequence is they actually build expectations that foreign aid will always be there. They sometimes take jobs away from Haitians. You know, there's huge importation of clothing and whatever, and that denies the entrepreneur in Haiti the opportunity to sell and grow their own business. And so while we totally understand and applaud the efforts, we'd love to see some consolidation and some real thoughtfulness put into, are we actually helping or are we hurting? And there's a big debate about foreign aid and whether the unintended consequences of it are actually doing a detriment to the country or whether it's helping. We selfishly happen to believe that we're making a difference, because we hold ourselves to measurable and accountable statistics to look at success. But we would love to see kind of less handouts and more, I don't know what the term
lifting
is.
Lifting up.
And, you know, part of that is, and we don't encourage people to come, because what we find and what we spend a lot of time thinking and praying about is, what are the agendas of people that come to Haiti? Is it to really make a difference in Haiti, or is it a place that it's so easy to feel good about yourself because it is so dramatically different, particularly compared to Aspen? It's the antithesis of Aspen. You can feel really good that you've helped somebody very quickly there, kind of like a drug. But are you going there to fill your Facebook page full of pictures of poor people, or are you really more focused and more kind of intentional about taking what you otherwise would have spent on a trip and making a donation to people that are accountable? And that also leads us to kind of a bigger issue that we think a lot about, is that after the earthquake, the Red Cross was donated $500 million. The Red Cross cannot account for $150 million of that. And for some of the accounting that it can do, a lot of that was spent on airfare, hotel rooms, accommodation, security, transportation. And so for a small, locally based organization, when people say, well, if I can't trust the Red Cross, how can I trust a $2 million organization that's based in Carbondale and Aspen, Colorado? And we take that and we say, here, we're going to show you. We're going to be totally transparent in mm-hmm. our finances. 100% of every donation goes to programming in Haiti because of our incredible board funds 100% of our admin expenses here in the States. And so, you know, that's kind of our view, that there are people that we do take down to Haiti. And those usually result in very long-term and long-lasting partnerships, both financially as well as kind of heart-wise and adding something more than just getting on a plane and coming to Haiti for a couple of days.
What's in the works next? What's coming up in 2018 for Haiti Children?
Yeah, I think the sustainability project, the farm project, is kind of a really exciting thing. And again, thanks to the great folks at Food for the Poor, you know, we're creating an environment of not only agronomy, but it's actually, this year, we hope to turn it into a classroom so our kids can not only learn about agronomy, but they can learn about yield for crops. They can learn about animal husbandry. They can learn about negotiation skills with either vendors or resorts, not resorts, in the area. So we can use it as a holistic classroom to teach real life skills, because a developing economy like Haiti usually starts with agriculture and it starts with tourism. And so that for us, I think, is a huge initiative that we want to expand upon. And the major funder of that program was at our campus a couple weeks ago. And we met with him in at the Miami airport. We were kind of crossing paths and he was just blown away. And he said, you know what, you're creating results with the funding that I've provided through Food for the Poor, and I want to do more, and I want to grow it even more. So I think that'll be a huge focus. I think, again, there'll be another, you know, we continue our policy kind of advocacy both in Washington and in Port-au-Prince, and so we'll continue to do that. We have our third graduating class coming up this year, too, so that'll be a really exciting opportunity for the organization. But it's really important. I mean, Haiti, there's a lot of fatigue around Haiti. Mm. It seems like there's never any good news that comes out of Haiti. You know, 250,000 people died in the earthquake, at least by the best estimates. You know, Hurricane Matthew came through last year. You've got a corrupt political system and a new president that we admire very much, but he's not shown a lot of results so far. And so there's this donor fatigue that we're battling constantly. And so, you know, organization, we can look at measurable results and know that we just can't stop, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there are 131 kids that live with us full time. Half of those kids will always live with us. And so we think a lot about succession planning. We think a lot about sustainability also.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much for taking the time to come in today.
Thank you very much for having us. Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure.
Been listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Thanks to my guests today, Susie Krabacker and Robin Hamill from Haiti Children. The organization provides care and education to abandoned, orphaned, and disabled children in Haiti. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. If you missed today's show, you can go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Cross Currents is a production of Aspen Public Radio.